This is the John Nuzzo Leadership Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this month's podcast. Before we get into the content, first, I want to thank you so much for being a part of this podcast, and I would encourage you to leave a review or share it with people if you think it's a benefit to you. It would really mean a lot to me. Before I get into the content specifically, I want to remind every one of you of the upcoming Encounter Conference. It's for middle school and high school students. It's June 19th through the 21st. The original cost up through the end of April was $29. May 1st, it jumped up to $49. It's an incredible three-day event. And pastors, leaders, moms, dads, grandparents, do everything you can do to get your student there. It's going to be an incredible time where they have an encounter with God. Our church is investing somewhere around $250,000 in this event so that we could keep it affordable for everybody. And so think of it like a camp experience along with a conference. I'm bringing in amazing people from the outside to speak to your students, and it's going to be remarkable. The final night will be with John Bevere. It's going to be remarkable. So make sure to connect, get your kids there. It's encounterconference.info if you want to get further information or register. This month, I want to continue talking to you about multiplication. It's one of the primary things I believe God is endeavoring to do church-wide, not just at the church I pastor and not just in churches, but in individual believers' lives, to multiply them so they can multiply the kingdom. Specifically today, I want to talk to you about what I believe to be the primary lid to multiplication. The primary lid to multiplication. Certainly, there are many lids that we can all experience. Now, I'm going to operate from some presumptions. I'm going to operate from the presumption that if you pastor a church, you're called to do it. If you lead a department or a business, or you lead in some area of your life, that you have a giftedness and a calling to do it. So the lid I'm speaking to today operates under some of those presumptions. Now, you can always develop your talent. We should always be gaining more knowledge, information, and wisdom. But this is a lid that if you don't deal with it, it won't matter how gifted you are. It won't matter how great the vision for your life is, the vision for your calling, what God's put in your heart, whether you pastor a church, in your family, your business, figure it out. It doesn't matter. The reality of it is this lid, if it isn't overcome, will stop you in your tracks. And it's going to sound very, very benign and very unimportant. It's even going to sound a little boring. But if you see the spiritual nature behind it and the spiritual examples behind it, it's my hope that you'll lean fully into this understanding. And it's simply this, the lid of structure. The lid of structure. I'm going to take you in our brief time together today into the parallels of leadership between Jesus and Moses and how they so paralleled. Moses, of course, being an Old Testament type of Jesus, he pointed to the Redeemer in so many ways. And he was a type of Christ and types and shadows from the Old Testament. But when you see the parallel lids that they experienced, and then as the church began, how God continued that same structure. Structure is not subjective. Godly structure is not subjective. There aren't five ways of doing godly structure. There's only one. There really is only one. And if you don't adopt the biblical God-breathed structure, it will become a lid to you, no matter how hard you work, no matter how gifted you are, and by the way, no matter how passionate you are. So let me just start with Moses. For many of you, this will be something you've heard maybe over and over again. But let me take the time and lay it out, and then lay out how it paralleled with Jesus and how it must parallel with me. You know, in my experience, I have seen pastors, and that's my world, with incredible passion and calling. But when I look at their effectiveness in multiplying their calling and fulfilling what God put in their heart, not a fantasy, not a dream, not a false expectation, but what Jesus placed in their heart, they hit a lid. And if they don't deal with that lid, they fight to overcome that lid in ways that will never do it. So Moses, like all of us with a passion, started out with all of his passion, all of his work and all of his effort trying to accomplish the task. So as Moses was leading the children of Israel, he came to a point to where he began to solve problems for people. And if you think about leadership, it really is about leading through problems and solutions. Moses had that same desire. It degenerated to where he was spending from morning till evening talking to people about their problems, judging matters of right and wrong. His father-in-law comes to him and he said, "Look, Moses, you're doing something wrong to the people." Moses responded by saying, "Hey, this is my purpose. This is what I'm here for. I have to be Godward for these people." And Jethro said, "What you're doing is not good." Moses said, "What I am doing is good." Both were right. Moses' desire and what Moses was accomplishing was good. The manner in which he was doing it was not good. And actually, Jethro said, literally, he said, "And God is actually speaking through me to tell you to do this." You can read it in Exodus 18. And so Moses thought he was doing a service, and Jethro said, "Listen," and these are a quote from Jethro, "The thing you're doing isn't good. You're going to wear yourself out and the people out. This thing is too heavy for you alone." I want you to hear that. No matter what you've been asked to do with your life, this thing is too heavy for you to do alone. You might say, I'm not doing it fully alone. Let me talk to you about how God gave Moses a structure that would actually define the capacity of people. One of the common things I've heard through the years is that all you need to be is faithful. Man, God will use you if you're just faithful. But the Bible doesn't teach that. Of course, faithfulness is critical. But the Bible couples faithfulness and ability together, or capacity. So Moses was commanded by God to build a structure to solve the problems. And it started by building, if you will, a pyramid, with Moses being at the top of that pyramid. And at the very base is where the very base problems would be solved. All the problems that Moses dealt with from morning till evening were going to have another way to be addressed. And then God commanded him. He said, "Now, I need you to define the capacity of people. I need you to discover captains of tens, or people with capacity to lead 10 people. People that then are captains of 50s, hundreds, and even thousands." He said, "But the hard cases, they should bring to you, Moses." So if you think of the pyramid of captains of tens, that would be the entry level for every problem. The problems they couldn't solve would go up to captains of 50s. The ones they couldn't solve to captains of hundreds. The ones they couldn't solve to captains of thousands. And the ones they couldn't solve, they would bring to Moses. Here's the interesting thing. This structure was multiplied through each tribe of Israel. So Moses built this structure. He defined capacity, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But he did it for the 12 tribes. That means that there were 12 people that had direct access to Moses to solve problems. 12. Does that number sound familiar with anybody you know? Then Moses also had 3 that worked with him very closely. Aaron and Hur and Joshua. Does that sound familiar to anyone you know? Peter, James, and John. Also, then Moses had 70. There was a point to where the people were so disgruntled about the food they were eating that God supernaturally supplied. Moses went to God and he said, "Hey, did I give birth to all these kids? They're not mine." And God kept calling, telling Moses, "These are your people." And Moses said, "No, they're your people." And God said, "Now here's what I'm going to tell you to do. Select 70 leaders from among the tribes of Israel. And I believe this is where you find what was eventually termed the Sanhedrin. And get these 70 leaders, and I'm going to take a portion of the Spirit of God I placed on you and place it on them." Does, again, 70 sound familiar? Jesus ordained 70. 70, 12, 3. Now, the 3 even are divided. Moses had 2 that supported him, Aaron and Hur, and Joshua, who was the one to take his mantle. Jesus had 3. In the Garden of Gethsemane, he cried out for their support. Unlike Aaron and Hur, they failed Jesus. He was alone. And Jesus ultimately ultimately pointed the future of the church to 11 people. Now, let me get back to Moses for a moment. So now Moses is commanded to define capacity. I wish we had more understanding as to how he did this, but let me give you an encouragement. Your intuitiveness will let you know capacity with people if you just talk to them. Remember this simple principle. A person with capacity outside of your church will have capacity inside your church. If somebody is in their mid-30s and they have a job that requires very little responsibility, and there's nothing wrong with a job that is a task-driven job, that's fine. But they don't oversee people. They're not responsible for budgets. And then they come to church because they're faithful to God and faithful to church. And you make them a leader because they're faithful. But ability doesn't show up like magic fairy dust when they walk into a church or when they walk into a business. How people live their everyday life will tell you their capacity. And so Moses built the structure based on what he perceived to be people's capacity. And I'm going to talk to you about the lid of capacity at the end of this, because this is so critical. I can tell you, hear me please, if you pastor a church, I will tell you the size of the church you have by the capacity of the immediate people under you. And it will be pretty close, within 10 to 20 people. And I look back over almost 40 years of ministry, and it is unchanging. And that's a metric you should know about. So when he said, find people with capacity, and then he said, you have to prepare them. And he told them to do three things. He said, you have to teach them the ordinances of God. That's the heart behind the mission. It's the why. And then he said, you have to show them the way they must walk. That's the how. And then you have to show them the work they must do. That's the what. But here's what I've learned in people who have a tendency to not find high capacity leaders. They're always having to show the how and the what, and the leader never knows the why. Never start with the how or the way to do it or the what, the work you have to do. Start with the why. If the why exists in a person, the heart behind it, the God behind it, then they'll be motivated beyond the task. Now, here's the interesting thing about the developmental nature of God's call. He said, Moses, I want you to teach them once, but show them twice. For every time you give an instruction, you need to show them. Two shows to every teach. How do you know if you have lower capacity leaders? If after 3 to 6 months to a year, you keep having to tell them what to do or show them what to do, then you may not have a leader at all. And yet you may have a marvelous human being, a godly person, a person who could find their place outside of leadership, doing an amazing thing, work for God. But he also said, you have to find people with ability. So the ability came from capacity, captains of tens, fifties, hundreds, and thousands. The capacity had to then be translated into a function. So teach them the why, show them the what and the how. And then you make them rulers over those areas. Now, what does that mean? Make them a ruler. That means you distribute responsibility, and they don't come to you for the how and the what. They come to you for the why. I don't know how to exaggerate this. Great leaders that have capacity, they will innately know how to do and will grow in the how and the why, and the what, I should say. The way they should walk, the work they must do. They won't need to come to you for that. In fact, they'll be better at it than you will. But the why is my responsibility. One of the most embarrassing things that happens to me, and it really does, it makes me so uncomfortable. People will come to me through the years and say, "What an amazing church you've built. You and Michelle built an incredible church." And nothing could be further from the truth. The people that God has surrounded me with, the leaders, the high-capacity leaders that have been developed here, those that are using their gifts, their hows, their whats, they have chosen to submit their calling to the calling of my life. That is one of the most precious gifts anyone can give you. And I honor that, and I am so grateful for every person who serves on our staff and in our church. But I can tell you this, and I can say this with, this is not hyperbole, this is not being self-deprecating. If God didn't send me key people, many of you won't know their names, and so I won't go into them, but our key lead people in this church, on our staff, if they weren't here, particularly in the early days, and now even more so now, but if I wasn't, if Matt Gaetz and Steve Moore didn't come, I today would be pastoring a church of about 300 to 400 people. And nothing would have been different about my gifts. But I am so limited. I'm so narrowly gifted that it required it of me. Many of you are 10 times more broadly gifted than I, and you're going to be tempted to try to do things you're not ultimately called to do. So let me get back to Moses. So he made them rulers, and he made this decision based on what God had called him to do. And now the problems are being solved. The Bible said the people went to their places in peace. And now a congregation, if you will, of a couple million people are having their problems solved. Tribe by tribe, because they were all living in their own areas. Each area had the exact same structure. Listen to that. The structure was the same. That's really important. Don't build five structures for five departments in your business or your church. One structure. And that same structure was overlaid. It caused 12 people to have access to Moses, which gave Moses the freedom to do his calling. So when Paul told Timothy, who was a pastor, he encapsulated all this in one verse in 2 Timothy 2:2. He said, "The things you've heard from me among many witnesses," so this is Paul to Timothy, that's one generation, "these same things you must commit," listen to that word, "commit to faithful men who shall be able or have ability to teach others also." Paul to Timothy, Timothy to a faithful and able leader, a faithful and able leader to another faithful and able leader. That's the multiplier. And what we have a tendency to do as pastors and even people in business is to try to solve the problems, if you will, the how and the what's. If you are still solving the hows and the what's for the people that are either employed or serving under you, volunteer capacity or otherwise, you have the wrong leader, or that leader still needs to be developed. And sometimes, particularly as pastors, our loyalty is to the potential of a person instead of the reality of a person. And I always try to put it in this context. If my child was having brain surgery, do I want a surgeon who is faithful or faithful and able? If they always show up on time, but 90% of the patients die, and they're always, their hands are washed well, and they tell me all the things they do, and I'm very committed to being here, but nobody lives, you immediately would say, "You can't touch my kid. I want an able surgeon." And that's a physical life. These are eternal lives. Now, here's what I want to help you to see. This concept will define your future, not your vision. Let's go back to the parallel as we wind this up between Jesus and Moses. So now we find Moses having 70, 12. These are direct relationships with him, and three. The people that supported Moses, Aaron and Hur, were aware of his weaknesses. When Moses became weak, as he was holding the rod over on the mountain, looking into the valley as Joshua fought, when he weakened and the rod would fall down, the people really began to lose the battle. Aaron and Hur didn't criticize him. They didn't judge him. They went over and they grabbed his arms, not the rod. They never took the rod out of his hands, but they held his arms up. What I want you to know about the people that are around you, listen, if you're a leader, if the people around you aren't aware of your weaknesses, they'll never be able to help you. If you were to sit in our staff meetings, in our lead team meetings, my weaknesses are almost, they become a joke because they're so glaring. And it isn't rude, it isn't unkind, it's just the truth. But the people in that room are so aware of my weaknesses. But I'm not pretending I don't have them. And the honest truth of it is, if they can't see my weaknesses and support them, they don't even belong in the room. No one is complete. We all need other people. And so when you put that team together, it's a remarkable room. But now they're empowered to go do the how and the what, but they never lose the why. My job is to keep the why in front of them. No matter what God has put in your heart, your vision, the dream He's put in your heart, I can define your future by your structure. So you have Moses following this through, and then Joshua, of the three, became the one who would take over for him. Jesus, of course, had 70. He had 12. He had the three. He needed them in the garden, and they weren't there for him. But when he ascended, the best of my study, it appears to me that there were 11 people present at the ascension. That blows my mind. It feels irresponsible to me. Jesus said, "Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel." It wasn't a shout. There were 11 dudes there. "Hey, go ye into all the world, preach the gospel to every creature." He's having a conversation. And then he's received up out of their sight by an angel. Jesus' structure let him leave the planet. You talk about delegation. And he put it in the hands of imperfect men. And then were empowered by the Holy Spirit. And it wasn't long before these men would be tempted to walk away from this godly structure. And you can study it in Acts chapter 6. As the apostles were tempted to leave their calling, to leave their mission, and go solve a church problem. And that church problem was not significant. What do I mean by that? It was a dispute between the widows. Now, women were the lowest in culture. Widows were below that. And these widows were called widows indeed, meaning the church supported them. They had no family. This is basically indigent people who have very little influence. And so it isn't the problem they were solving, but it was the fact that they had to leave what they were doing to go solve a problem. They said, "This isn't right." The same thing Jethro said, "This is wrong that we're doing this." And they chose 7 men. 2 of those 7 we see in Scripture, Philip and Stephen. You see them later on being used in different capacities. But here's what I want you to see. In Acts 6, they passed this test. After those 7 men solved the problem, the Bible said the church multiplied and many priests became obedient to the faith. Here's my question. How in the world does solving a widow problem with people that have no influence cause the church to multiply? Because people found their place and multiplication occurred. It isn't the problems that get solved all the time. It's the fact that the right people are in the right place so that no matter what comes up, they are solving it. If the leaders around you are not solving problems to an outcome of peace. Listen to this, please. This is a takeaway. If the leaders around you are not solving problems to an outcome of peace, they are not either developed and ready for that role, or they're not a leader. Define your leaders by, do they solve problems? Can they see problems coming on the horizon? If not, you'll spend your entire life with your mind working like a radar, trying to think of the next thing that someone else isn't going to see. And I can tell you from experience, having incredible people that have found their place around me, incredible leaders with incredible capacity, they see things I'll never see. They solve problems I never would have seen. But what I have is narrow. I understand that. But I magnify the call of God on my life, as Paul did. I celebrate the grace on my life because Jesus chose me and gave me this narrow giftedness. But what he's given me is sight. I can see tomorrow. I can see what it's supposed to be. I could see the calling. And what I want to help you to see is how to overcome that lid and the lid of structure. Study Exodus. Study the life of Jesus. Study how the early church operated. Don't violate it. And grow in empowering leaders to lead and narrow the field of who you speak to ultimately so that you can multiply and then they can multiply and then they can multiply. If this has been helpful to you, just please pass it along to some other leaders. I love you all so much. Look forward to being with you. next month. God bless you.
Thanks again for tuning in to the John Nuzzo Leadership Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love for you to rate, review, and share this podcast on iTunes. It's a great way to get the word out and to help others grow as leaders. We'll see you back here next time for another episode of the John Nuzzo Leadership Podcast.